Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Relationships Rule, a podcast where I interview amazing people and we talk about relationships and the power of relationships. And also, I love to find out lots about my guests and their take on what they do. My guest today is Aura McKay. And Aura actually lives in the same area that I do in Vancouver, Canada, which is very unusual that I have someone local here. So welcome to the show, Aura.
Thank you. You're
welcome. Aura is the founder of Business of Creativity, an award-winning professional photographer and an inspiring business coach. And in the little bit that I've gotten to know her, I can see how inspiring she is. Just the way you talk, the way you approach things, you have such energy about you that I can see how that would be inspiring. So I'm going to stop there because one question that I think I asked you this when we first met, but it intrigues me and I want to ask again because I've forgotten the answer, is how you got your name, Aura. I asked you, is it your real name or was it like a numerology thing or something? Because it's unusual. And
it is unusual. I got my name from my parents.
Okay.
So it was, I'm a product of the 60s generation. So I was born in 1970. Those of you doing the math, yes, I am almost 54. So it's happening. But it was at a time when my mom and dad, whose names are Sue and Bob, which, you know what I mean? Like, and they're completely different. They really wanted to lean into empowering me with the idea that I could be anything and that there were no limits and that I didn't have to live within the constraints of normal society, even like that there was a lot of freedom to be had. And that actually shaped my life considerably moving forward in terms of how the kind of burdens I carry and also the kind of opportunities that I get to see. And an interesting thing about my name though, Janice, is that when I was about 6 years old, I was so frustrated because I was trying to make relationships. I was trying to make new friends in school and I was trying to figure out, like, you know, where's my place in school? And I was often the new kid and I had a weird name and my parents were hippies. So I didn't have the right thing in my lunchbox and I didn't have the right clothes. And all of these sort of outside accoutrements are what allow us to belong in a group or belong in a place or to connect and make relationships with other people. And so I changed my name. And I actually called myself Kathy.
Love it.
9 years.
Oh, Kathy. I love it. I get it. Because I was a school teacher in my first life and I taught elementary school and names were really relevant to how a kid was in school. And so I've always felt curious about names and remember kids that struggled with certain things and they usually had unusual names. And your name to me is beautiful. And it's very, of course, spiritual and all of that good stuff. And yes, I was going to say your parents must've been hippies and I get it. And, it's just, I don't know. I mean, it does shape you for sure. And I remember my second daughter had a little girl in her grade one class who changed her name from Jessica to not Kathy, but something really simple like, and then now is back to her true name as well. But it's so important what you name children because it does.
Like even thinking about being adults and being entrepreneurs and running our own business, you can, like even a business name can help you feel more trusting or give you insight into who you might be working with. And so names in terms of building relationships can be really integral to that part of that building block. And yeah. And also like how we feel about it can really make a difference. So
yeah, but now do you think, well, I'm sure, were your parents creatives as well?
Yeah. So my mom is still very creative. She is 81 and she is an actor. She is in some of the things that you see on Netflix and local like Family Law and things like that. And her name is Sue Sparlin.
Okay.
And so she is still a creative, and growing up, she was a mezzo soprano opera singer. I mean, she worked as a secretary, but she did all of this creative stuff. My dad is absolutely still creative. He and his wife live on Salt Spring Island. He is a wood turner and an artist, and he works with his hands, and she is a painter. Mm. And so very much creativity and, you know, growing up with that as a kind of a grounding, or as like, this is how we live, is we live with the possibility and anything is possible. It actually created what I call the burden of extraordinary.
Yes. Okay.
Because I was told you can do anything, you can be anything. You're so talented. You're so creative. You're so smart. You're so intelligent. You could do anything. Like, you're an extraordinary human being. Go, go. And I was like, uh-oh. That means that anything I choose to do, I have to be extraordinary. Mm. Or I have to choose something in life that's going to be extraordinary. So I think that there's a lot of sort of external pressure and expectation that we kind of carry with us throughout our lives and can really impact how we move forward in terms of when we are meeting people or we're trying to move into a new marketplace or create new relationships.
So that makes me think to sort of switch to the other side in a sense. So you, and bear with me for a second. So you have been a photographer, for a professional photographer for 20 years. You've been that route. Now you coach creatives, photographers, designers, artists, I'm guessing, musicians.
So much artists, not so much. Thank you for that distinction. I like to work with visual creative freelancers, okay. People who are using their creative talents in service of others, not so much as to create artwork that's a self-expression and then finding a market for it, but creating using our creative talents and skills in service to others. So visual creative freelancers. Yeah.
So visual creative freelancers, like photographers,
videographers, graphic designers, illustrators. Yeah. Okay. Those are my people for sure.
Okay. Because what I was going to say, and I'm just curious to get your take on this, because your upbringing made you see or allowed you to see the possibilities and no top on that possibility for the creative professions.
Yeah.
But I remember hearing all the time that there was everyone in that was a starving artist. Yeah.
So this is why I have a job. Like, this is why my business exists, Janice, is that partly to dispel that mindset that creative people are starving artists and you'll never make money. And if you follow your heart or follow your passion, you know, you'll live a happy life, but you'll live a poor life.
Yes.
Or the other one that I grew up with was, oh, just do what you love. The money will follow. Oh, just if you build it, they will come.
Yes, right. And
both of those are not really very supportive worldviews. If you are a multi-passionate creative person who's looking to bring your voice to the marketplace and contribute your ideas and creativity and innovation. So that's really one reason why I built Business of Creativity, was because I wanted to challenge that mindset. I wanted to challenge that belief system, and I wanted to challenge that reality in the marketplace, because it was based on mostly creative people not being given the training or the skills they need to be successful. It's not that creative people are incapable. It's just that
they don't have the background. They don't have the training. Right.
And traditional business models. So one of the things that you kind of left out of the biography there is before I became a photographer, I was an accountant.
Oh, that's right. And I had that in my notes here, actually.
So that allowed me to get really clear about what are some traditional business models? How do traditional businesses go about setting out plans and revenue goals and finding clients and marketing and doing all of those businessy things? Mm-hmm. And then I looked at myself as a freelancer and went, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. Like, no wonder people fail.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I support myself and also support others in finding ways to do business and be successful in this gig economy as a creative?
So you were, you're the anomaly really though, to have the left brain, right brain thing to, you know, be good at the numbers and so on. So when you're working with the creatives that you're coaching and they're yawning when you're talking about numbers, or they're like pulling their hair out because they're so right brain that they can't handle it at all. I'm guessing you don't do it for them, but you probably encourage them to have, you know, to have other people do that for them, but then they can't afford it. So how do they deal with it?
Well, that's a really good point you're making, Janice, is that most of my clients are solopreneurs. So they're not in a position of creating team or going into leadership or wanting to even create an agency or expand into an enterprise model. They really like the solopreneur business model. Right. And so then how do they take care of all of those things that do make them pull their hair out or like yawn and fall asleep instantly? Yeah. And that is the challenge, because there are things that we need to know about business that are about business. Like, we keep score with numbers. Money is how we keep score with business. So we have to know the numbers and be able to keep score. So part of how I support them is I've created a magic unicorn spreadsheet that has color codes, and you only have to fill in the yellow things. And then you look at the blue one and the pink one and the green one. And that helps you figure out your minimum price for profitability. It helps you figure out what your monthly income needs to be. It helps you figure out what your sales goals are. And I do it in a way that has a lot of repetition, because there are some people that learn this way and some people that learn this way. And a lot of my clients have neurodivergence in their makeup. And so I need to, as the instructor and the coach and the supporter, or rather I choose to, I actually love finding multiple different ways of helping people access the information they need to be successful in business in a way that actually works for them and for their brain. So that's creative the challenge for me, is how do I stay relevant to everybody?
That's really, really, that's the mind of a teacher, to my mind. That is the mind of a teacher, because we know as teachers that, you know, children learn in different ways, adults learn in different ways as well. And you need to find the way that's going to work for them. So that's a bonus again in what you're doing. And so I identify and love the idea of the color coding, because when it comes to the numbers and all of that, I can only do what I've been taught to do to keep my business on track. Otherwise I get a headache. And it's not that I'm a completely right brain person, but I don't know. I just had a lecture from my husband about numbers. So, you know.
So you're feeling the pain right now.
Feeling it today.
And that's it. Like, a lot of the work, as you said, it starts with that mindset of, oh, I'm a creative, I'm never going to be successful. And then it goes, what other kind of beliefs do you have about who you are in the world? Well, I'm never going to be good at numbers. They're always going to give me a headache. And it's like, whenever you say, you're right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Rather than leaning into the weaknesses,
yes,
or the perceived weaknesses or the perceived lack, I like to lean into, what are you awesome at already? What in your business is already working for you?
Mm-hmm.
Where are your clients already coming from? How can you get more of those, rather than, oh, you should be on Instagram, you should be on LinkedIn, you should be, I don't like to should on anybody.
No.
So it's really interesting. There was a book called the Clifton Strengths Finder that I used when I was working in corporate, because I did work in corporate. I was an accountant and worked in corporate, worked in marketing, did all of that kind of stuff before I became a freelancer. And the Clifton Strengths Finder is really interesting because it really does lean into what are your strengths and how can you use your strengths to tackle some of the challenges. So how can you use your brilliant brain when it comes to relationships and building relationships and understanding human beings? Mm-hmm. How could that possibly work for you when it comes to numbers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, how could that line be drawn? And exploring that and getting curious about how can we make it work for the individual?
So do you find that, I mean, I know everybody's different. People are unique and different, but are there like two or three specific things that often or most often come up when you're working with creatives? Then is one of them numbers, for example, their lack
of them is absolutely numbers for sure. There's five, because, you know, we're creative, so we have lots of different things, but one of them is about like clarity and focus and direction. And like, I have all of these ideas and all these things that I want to do and all these things I could do. And all these like different, like marketing is so overwhelming, as you know, which is why it's so brilliant that you have focused and simplified. This is the tool that I'm going to use. This is the tool that I know works for me is relationships. So for them, the first thing is helping them just get clarity and focus and direction. And then the next one, interestingly enough, is self-management. It's time management, boundary management. So it's things like overwhelm and burnout and imposter syndrome and self-doubt and confidence in running a business. So those two kind of foundational things is where we usually start. And then we get into numbers. We get into pricing and numbers and understanding the numbers that are important and how to interact with numbers in a different way and change your relationship with numbers. Sure. And then we get specifically into clients and really understanding, looking at clients. I don't know if you've found this, Janice, but one of the things that I find a lot with solopreneurs or people who are using their own skills as their service is that they tend to look at their business only from their perspective. And in order to be successful at relationships and marketing, we have to really put ourselves in somebody else's shoes.
We have to. I know for me on LinkedIn, it's like creating the profile optimum in an optimum way. I'm trying to say a word that I can't say.
Optimally.
Thank you. You have to have it client facing if you're an entrepreneur, or a solopreneur, or a business owner, not be about you. And that's a misnomer that a lot of people do on LinkedIn. So yes, you have to see it from other people's perspective for sure.
Yeah. So that's really the fourth thing that we look at is really understanding your clients. And then once we have all of that, then we can go into marketing and sales.
Yeah.
We can go into marketing clarity. What is your marketing message? What is your brand voice going to be like? And then what is the sales model that's going to work best for you to connect to your clients and get successful sales? Earn more money, stress less, grow with confidence. Just do it.
Yeah. Exactly. And I can see the passion you have for what you do. If you've been listening to me for a while, you probably know that I love to talk about LinkedIn. So now I'm curious, are you ready to take your LinkedIn to the next level? Because if you are, I've got the perfect opportunity for you. As a valued podcast listener, I'm offering you a 1 month free trial to the LinkedIn Advantage program. It's your chance to join the community of like-minded professionals and immerse yourself in a space designed for learning, networking, and growing your business, and a lot of LinkedIn as well. Don't miss out. If you're ready to go from listener to participant, take advantage of this free trial by visiting podcastadvantage.janiceporter.com today. That's podcastadvantage.janiceporter.com. Join us and we'll see you in the group. So So talking about that word I couldn't say, I saw that you love big words.
I do.
Okay, so talk to me about that. Are you a Scrabble player or do you do crossword?
I'm not. Okay. My love of big words, one of my core values is communication. Mm-hmm. And one of my worldviews is that circumstances are circumstances, and it is the stories we tell ourselves about those circumstances that creates our experience of life. So if we say, it's raining and it's terrible and it's cold and oh, that's awful, and that's a story that we can tell ourselves about something that we have no control over. Mm-hmm. And through our language, we can change the story that we tell ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so we can start telling ourselves like, oh man, what a perfect day to stay inside. And what a great excuse to cuddle up in front of the fire. And oh, I'm so grateful for the heater in my house. And we can change our focus through our language. So that's where my love of language started. And then I started to learn really cool words like anthropomorphize and consilience and reification. And I got excited about that there's words and language that we don't use on a regular basis that are so rich and descriptive and wonderful. And it's actually now my Achilles heel when it comes to marketing. Because I want to communicate using words and language that are important to me facing, and that what I need to do to be successful is use words and language that my clients care about and resonate with. So the hard lesson in communication is that it's not about me, it's about the listener.
Yes, but I'm not even talking business right now. I'm just like, I love words and I love the etymology of words, but I don't know, do you read the dictionary? Where do all these words come from?
Where do these words come from? Conversations.
No, come on. No. Because
100%.
Words that you just mentioned, never heard of them.
So yeah.
So, talking to the wrong people, obviously.
Right. And I think that's really the thing about, are you talking to the right people? Yeah. In your relationships, like, are you having the conversations that light you up, that give you new vocabulary or new perspectives and new possibilities? And then the other piece about where I learn new words is I run a book club for freelancers. So this is a free book club. Anybody listening is absolutely welcome to join this book club. We meet twice a month. We usually take a full month to read one book, and they're all business or communications books.
Fun. Okay.
So I make and how this started is I had a should shelf of shame. I had a shelf of books that I was like, oh, I should read that. Oh, I should read that. And it was starting to like kind of weigh on me.
Yes.
And so I started this book club as a way of doing the reading that I wanted to do, but doing it in support and in relationship with my community. Mm-hmm. And so now I get all of these new words, and then I share the books with other people, and then we get to have conversations where we get introduced to new language. Yeah.
I have to talk about that offline. I think that's fun. So I've had a different challenge. Like, I find that I'm listening to podcasts. I admit I do watch television. If it's not a basketball game though, or a tennis match, it's, you know, something on Netflix, or I'm a movie buff. I love really interesting films, not necessarily movies, but Maestro that just came out. Some people loved it and some people hated it because it's an art film. It's not for everybody. But anyway, so I love that kind of thing. But I have, in the last few years, the only books that I've been reading really are books of people that are on my podcast, or books, business books. And I can't get myself back to reading a novel. So I bought this book 6 months ago because I heard, or I saw on CBS Sunday Morning, the author was being interviewed, and it looked really interesting. And she's done amazing with this book. It's called Lessons in Chemistry, which
yes, I've heard of it. Yeah.
So it sat on my bedside table every night. I would pick up my iPad, or I'd pick up my crossword book or my People magazine, and I would never open the book. Now the show Lessons in Chemistry has been made into a limited series on Apple TV, and I see it occasionally there, and I go, nope, I'm not going to watch it until I've read the book. Right. So I finally started the book 3 nights ago. I'm into chapter 3 now. So I'm going to try and make it through this book, but I lose attention span. That's the problem. I'm so busy with thinking I've got to write this newsletter, or I've got to listen to this podcast, or I've got to check this person's book out, that I never get back to novels anymore. And I love so other novels.
This is interesting, because the first books we read were things like Finding Focus in an Age of Distraction and Atomic Habits.
Yes,
and
I read that
Now
too.
Habit. And so those tools help me to do the things that I want to do. Also, a really interesting thing about procrastination that I learned, and that I see as helpful for the people that I work with, and really, I mean, for myself, let's be honest, is the idea that procrastination is not a problem. It's a symptom.
Okay, probably.
You find yourself procrastinating, it's a symptom of something else happening, because procrastination is different from avoidance. Avoidance is like, I'm avoiding doing the dishes. I don't want to do the dishes, and I'm just going to avoid it. Procrastination is like having your foot on the gas for something you really want to do, but having your foot on the brake at the same time. Of, you know, I want to read this book because I hear it's great, but I'm not reading it. So what's that about? And usually procrastination is coming from a place of fear. I'm afraid I'm not going to like it. I'm afraid I'll start it and get distracted. I'm afraid it's going to be a waste of my time. I'm afraid whatever it, like there can be, and it can be really subtle in terms of what it is that's causing us to stop it. So I think for me, like once I realized that procrastination wasn't a problem and it wasn't a flaw and it wasn't something wrong with me and I wasn't bad, it was like a symptom. It was like a headache, or like, oh, there's a rock in my shoe, I need to look at it.
Yeah.
It gave me way different access to being able to get curious about my behavior and what was behind the behavior.
Okay. So going on that theory, I certainly am now, I've opened that door of that challenge to read the book. If I don't like the book, I won't continue it, but I'm liking it so far. I'm liking the way that she's writing it. And I think for me, if it was anything why I procrastinated, it's because I feel so short of time for all the amazing things that are out there, that is this the thing I should focus on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, much better to focus on People Magazine.
Yeah.
So this is the thing though, Janice.
I know.
So remember that the second thing that I really help people with is sort of that self-management, time management, mindset management thing. One of the biggest access points to understanding your relationship with time is to start looking at your time, not on a day-to-day basis, not in a 24-hour chunk, but to look at it in terms of a week. You have 168 hours in a week, and start to do a breakdown. Okay. I usually want to sleep 8 hours, but it's usually six, or how long am I in bed? And just start to look at it. And some of my people who are the most overwhelmed and burnt out are trying to do 175 hours worth of stuff in 168. Some of my people who are most afflicted by procrastination find that they only actually are filling 150 hours with intention, and that there are all of these ghost hours that just seem to disappear. And once they're aware of it, they can make more intentional choices.
That's really a great lesson. So here you are coaching me on this. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I find that very interesting. I might do
and
that.
And FYI, when I binge watch, because I totally binge watch, it's in my schedule. I have book time for it because I know I'm going to do it anyways. Yeah. I binge watch home improvement shows.
Oh, I love those too. Yeah.
And what I really like about it when I'm watching them is it's not completely zoned out, because what I watch about them is I pay attention to, there's the home reno person, and then there's the client.
Yeah.
And the questions that the home reno person asks the client is like doing a creative brief. And it's really doing a needs discovery. It's like a sales call. And then what I noticed throughout the show is they keep coming back to, oh, you want this outcome. So, you know, yeah, we're going to fix all the plumbing and we're going to do all of this so that you can have your spa bathroom. And finally, so it really focuses on outcome-based conversations, outcome-based promises.
You've been watching the twins.
I've been watching all of them. I think I'm on repeats for everybody.
Celebrity IOU, that's the one.
So it's really interesting to me to be even just observing where can I learn about how relationships work mm-hmm. in a service-based industry? How can I pay attention to? What can I take away from what somebody else is doing? I mean, one of the beautiful things, I was going to grab it off my corkboard because it was usually over here, but I moved it. After our first conversation, Janice, you sent me a thank you card. Mm-hmm. And you personalized the thank you card. Mm-hmm. And you created something that I thought, like, it really made an impact on me. I remembered it. I have it saved for me. And it's like that kind of, when you can make that kind of connection with someone and then have it have some longevity is super powerful.
Thank you. Yes, I agree. I think especially if it's something tactile.
Yeah.
Because it takes people from their head to their heart.
Yeah.
And that's the hope anyway. Yes. Okay, so this has been delightful. And did I know I was going to get coached in here? No, I did not. But I...
Can I ask permission? I did not, but I hope you...
But it's okay. I'm open to it and I love it. Great. So I know that you... what was I going to say? You have a podcast too.
And
in your podcast, you do solo episodes, correct? Or do you do interviews as well? I'm not sure.
I'm only doing solo episodes right now. I'm looking at... one of the things that I really love is evidence of awesome and celebrating wins and progress and process and really encouraging ourselves. Like even when we do something that feels really minor, like, oh, I sent that email. Yay!
I know.
Did it. Like I'm really all about that. So I'm looking at possibly in the future, expanding my podcast to include opportunities to feature some of my clients
and
celebrate them. At the moment, it's more of kind of like edutainment. I pick specific topics and I usually give about 8 to 10 minutes worth of bite-sized little
tips. I saw that. I listened to one or two and yeah, very useful for your target audience for sure. Okay. Second last question. You may or may not have seen on the sheet that I sent you, and you know this about me already, that I'm a curious person. So I always like to get people's take on curiosity. So it's a two-part question. Do you believe that curiosity is innate or learned? And part two is, what are you most curious about these days?
So do I believe that curiosity is innate or learned? My answer is yes, both. So I feel like all human beings have some curiosity, especially when we're born, because that's how we learn. We get curious about things and we learn. Mm-hmm. I think that the practice of applying curiosity with intention does take some training. And I think especially for adults, playing with what if rather than having to know. I think adults are really uncomfortable with uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And I think curiosity lives in uncertainty and getting comfortable with being uncertain so you can be practicing curiosity.
Oh, that's
I think is yeah. The difficult thing for my clients is that uncertainty feels like anxiety and I don't know, and it kind of stops them and they get really fixed in the uncertainty and can't really access curiosity without maybe help. And I think that that's the really key piece is that as solopreneurs or when you're by yourself, it's hard to ask those curiosity questions and get new answers.
Also, though, having a comfortable or a strong sense of curiosity helps you with what you talked about earlier, right? In finding out from your client what they really want and also what they need, because sometimes those are different, and being able to pull that out of them. So yeah, fair enough. And what
I
do you
think that there's a lot of blocks to curiosity, like, oh, I'm not here to get curious. I can't ask questions about my client because it's going to make me look stupid, or like, I don't know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think that I think the practice of curiosity as an adult and the practice of curiosity in sales and in business is something that isn't innate, that how to do it in a way that you feel comfortable with, that comes across as professional and that gets you the kind of information that you need to move forward is something that needs to be trained. And that's definitely part of how I focus. So yes. And train. And then the last question you asked, which is, what am I currently curious about? I'm going to share what's really on my mind and what's really personal. It's not about my business right now. I have external forces that are happening and things that are out of my control. One of my family members is quite ill and got quite ill quite suddenly and will likely pass in the next 3 to 4 days. Mm-hmm. And so my curiosity is a place where I can lean into as a safe place to swim right now is to, okay, I can be curious about what is this process going to look like and where, what kind of resources can I get to and who can I turn to support and how do other people work within this? So I think that what I'm curious about is less important than having curiosity as a tool to lean into.
Wow, that's huge. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that, because that's a big message there. All right, let's take the last question as knowing how passionate you are about your work, and I see that I can tell that your clients are probably really loyal clients and lean on everything that you tell them. I can just feel it, that the connection, the relationship that you have with them is important. What would be one piece of advice you could share with my audience before we wrap up about business? Mm.
Okay. So I'm going to share my core message for success, which no matter what industry you're in or where you're at and whatever phase of life you're in or whatever you're doing, is what are the three core beliefs that are going to help you be successful? And the first core belief is around hope and possibility, that you have to believe that success is possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is what we were speaking around earlier about the core messages that are like, oh, starving artists, and if you're creative, you'll never work, and all of this stuff. So changing that mindset and being able to believe that it is possible. Mm-hmm. And then the second piece is that it's possible for you.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because there's all this like, oh, other people can do it. Oh, other people have more, better, different, whatever it is. But I can't because I have lack and insufficiency and whatever. Mm-hmm. So really believing that success is possible, that it's possible for you. And then the final one, which is the one that speaks to your relationship with numbers, is that success is worth it. That it's worth it to look at the numbers and do the number part and be uncomfortable and be in a place that's not your zone of genius, and really getting connected to why it's worth it.
Wow, those are amazing. Appreciate that, so good. And I thank you for being here and for sharing all of your, I love having conversations with new people that I've only met briefly, because so much more comes out and I want to hear so much more from you next time I talk to you, kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So thank you again, Aura, for being on the show. I have the information of where people can reach you, your website, businessofcreativity.ca. We'll put all of that, and you have a YouTube channel, you're on LinkedIn, and you have a podcast. We'll put all that in the show notes.
Great.
And thank you to my audience for being here, for being loyal to me, and for listening. Please let us know that you enjoyed the episode by leaving a positive review. We appreciate that. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.